looking at the entire landscape and identifying what is missing that you could bring to the table through your lens. Also, ask yourself, looking at the landscape of Web3, what currently makes me red hot with anger? What massively infuriates me? What am I incredibly frustrated by every single day? Solve that, because that's a billion-dollar opportunity.
Hello and welcome back to the Women of Web3 podcast. I'm Lauren Ingram and I'm the founder of Women of Web3. We're a community and a consultancy, and we've been educating thousands of women about Web3 and sharing jobs, events, and learning resources like this podcast. In every episode, I'll be interviewing an incredible leader about their learnings. We start off by breaking down the Web3 jargon, then we head deeper down the rabbit hole. Please do subscribe and give us a rating. It really helps more people find the podcast. This week, we have a very special guest. She's going to blow your mind. I'm going to be talking to Cindy Gallup. Yes, Queen Cindy. She's a phenomenal entrepreneur. She used to be about as senior as you can get in advertising. She was the chair of International Ad Agency, BBH. She's now a tech pioneer. She's the founder of Make Love Not Porn. She's even got about 100,000+ followers on LinkedIn. And she's got really, really unique insights into technology's impact on women and for female founders. So we're going to get into a really meaty conversation about women, tech, Web3, and porn. It's a little bit different to our usual territory. So if you ever play your podcasts around your kids or your colleagues, today you might want headphones. But honestly, the content of our conversation, you're going to love it. She's incredibly straight talking. She's going to light a fire in your belly and you're going to go and blow shit up after listening. So on that note, here's Cindy. I'm delighted to have you on the show, Cindy. Obviously, I know exactly who you are, but I'd love to hear how you describe who you are and what you do.
Sure. I'm Cindy Gallup. I'm the founder and CEO of Make Love Not Porn. We are pro-sex, pro-porn, pro-knowing the difference.
Amazing. Thank you. So you've gone from chair of an international ad agency, BBH, through to tech founder that you've been doing for a number of years now. What would you say have been some of the biggest challenges or hurdles you've faced? I know that funding, for example, has been maybe a big part of that.
Well, you know, it's very simple. When you have a venture that's designed to change the world through sex, you face an extraordinary amount of battles every single day, basically because every piece of business infrastructure that any other tech startup just gets to take for granted, we can't. The small print always says no adult content. And that is all pervasive. Can't get funded, can't get banked, can't put payments in place, can't use tech services, can't advertise, you know, can't advertise for jobs. Literally everything is a problem when you're a sex tech venture.
Out of interest, does Web3 offer something alternative from a financial point of view in terms of being able to access capital?
Regrettably not, as long as Web3 investors not falling over themselves to fund Make Love Not Porn.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, I can understand that because I've even been thinking in planning this episode, I don't know whether Apple Podcasts will penalise the mention of porn and the sort of, you know, we're going to be talking about the impact of AI and porn, that kind of thing. I don't know what the impact will be on the reach of this episode, because I think it's really important to have these conversations because it has such a sort of fundamental impact on our society. But before we jump into the Web3 side of things, I would love to chat about AI and the impact on porn, because I'm assuming that will affect your business model.
No.
It won't?
No, it won't. Because Make Love Not Porn, as our name suggests, is not porn. We are pioneering a whole new category on the internet that has never before existed, social sex. So the way to think about us is, if porn is the Hollywood blockbuster movie, Make Love Not Porn is the badly needed documentary. We are a unique window onto the funny, messy, loving, wonderful sex we all have in the real world. So, you know, we are not porn, which is produced, performative, scripted entertainment. We are simply a celebration of the fabulous sex that we all have in the real world every day.
And just returning to that AI point, so I love the business model and I've known it for a long time, Make Love Not Porn. I think it's a fantastic idea and also so needed when talking about sort of younger people, younger men, and their understanding of what's normal from a sort of sex point of view. But I did wonder, because there's just so much porn on the internet, and I suppose with the sort of AI generated possibilities, I mean, even when you think about copywriting, we're going to have a sort of abundance of, you know, computer generated copywriting. It's going to be the same with making sexual content. Does that mean people might be sort of steered towards the AI generated type of content? Or I was also wondering if it could mean that you'd have fewer porn actors sort of needed. Maybe that could be a positive thing for women?
So first of all, Lauren, mm-hmm. as I said, I don't operate in the porn industry. So I can't answer those questions because that's not what I look at on a day-to-day basis. On the other hand, however, I have had an AI strategy to make love, not porn, for the past 5 years. Mm. And the only reason you have not seen it manifested is because, again, I cannot find investors. And my AI strategy is designed to create something that can be utterly transformative for the world. Because our overall mission at Make Love Not Porn ultimately is to help end rape culture globally. And by the way, a part of that is what you're referencing, which is, you know, deep faked AI porn. We help end rape culture by doing something incredibly simple that nevertheless nobody else anywhere on the internet is doing. We end rape culture by showing you how wonderful great consensual communicative sex is in the real world. Our social sex videos at Make Love Not Porn role model good sexual values and good sexual behavior. And here's the important part. We make all of that aspirational versus what you see in porn and popular culture. And so my AI strategy for Make Love Not Porn is designed to further this mission because as you, I think, already know, we operate at Make Love Not Porn unlike not just anybody else in the adult sphere, but unlike anybody else on the internet, period. Because I designed Make Love Not Porn through the female lens to be the safest place on the internet. I designed it around what everybody else should have, nobody else did, human curation. So there's no self-publishing of anything on Make Love Not Porn. Our curators watch every frame of every video from beginning to end before we approve or reject, and we publish it. No one else does that. We review every post on every member profile. And by the way, at Make Love Not Porn, your posts can be as safe work, not safe work as you like, but we review them. We approve or reject and we publish them. No one else does that. We review every comment on every video. We approve or reject and we publish it. No one else does that. We can vouch for every single piece of content on our platform in a way that nobody else on the internet can. And bear in mind, we're tiny, bootstrapping, have no money, and we've human curated everything for nearly 11 years. Imagine mm-hmm. what Facebook, Instagram, YouTube could do with their billions if they chose to. Safety on the internet is not a matter of viability, it's a matter of will. And by the way, our human curation model is eminently scalable. You know, at scale, as a billion-dollar company, which is where I want to take this, our human curation workforce is simply our equivalent of any enterprise software's human sales force. So that's our mission. And because of our unique human curation model, we have an utterly unique large video model, LVM. We have a unique pool of video content that is the only pool of fully consensual sexual content on the internet. And so what I can do when I get funding to do this is I can build an algorithm for consent. I can build an algorithm for consent that can be used in numerous use cases. For example, Hollywood, movies, TV, popular culture. There are many representations of sex in popular culture as a whole that purport in the context of the narrative to be consensual, but are actually role modeling non-consensual approaches and behaviors. And so you can use our algorithm to run scenes through to see whether or not they're consensual. Criminal court, where, as you know, 1% of rapes result in any kind of criminal conviction. You know, and so again, in a he said, she said scenario where the onus is always put on the victim to defend their own truth, an algorithm for consent would help to enable a better understanding of what is and isn't consensual. Mm-hmm. So that's what I want to build. That's the AI strategy I've had in place for 5 years. I've talked about this publicly for 5 years. And so far, I've not been able to find any investors.
Wow. It's a remarkable business model, and I'd love to hear more about it and where you get to with it. And I also hope that in our sort of wider network, there will be people thinking, okay, I know somebody for Cindy. But out of interest, what's the split in terms of your viewers of sort of male, female, who's watching your content?
Sure. So important to say that, again, because I designed Make Love Not Porn through the female lens, we deliberately do not capture any data about our members beyond your email address and your user handle. We obviously have a lot more data on our Make Love Not Porn stars, our contributors, because obviously they have to fully identify themselves, provide two forms of government issued ID. You know, we don't publish anything that isn't fully legal, consensual, everyone's over 18. But what I can tell you is that I designed Make Love Not Porn to be fully diverse and inclusive. And it is. Our members in our Make Love Not Porn stars range in age from 18 to 80, male, female, trans, non-binary, you know, straight, LGBTQ, all races, ethnicities. And by the way, we deduce, looking at our membership, that it's a pretty even split, men, women. You know, then we, as I say, we have a lot of trans, non-binary members as well. But in the nearly 11 years that Make Love Not Porn has been operating, we've discovered that we are especially a revelation to men. More men write appreciative emails, leave grateful comments in our videos than anybody else, because we are something utterly unique that men will find nowhere else on the internet, which is a safe space where men can be and watch other men being open, emotional, and vulnerable around sex. You would not believe the number of men who write to us regularly and say, I just watched my first video of Make Love Not Porn and afterwards I cried. I wish society understood the opposite of what it thinks is true. Women enjoy sex just as much as men, and men are just as romantic as women. Yet neither gender is allowed to openly celebrate either fact, and we would all be so much better off if they were. I picked up a wonderful exchange on Twitter last year between two men. The first man had tweeted, as a joke, hey guys, got this really weird fetish. I've got this kink where I want to watch porn where people are honest, loving, loyal, decent, and really like each other. Hit me up with your hottest links, please. And another man replied, and he said, there's this website called Make Love Not Porn where you can watch real couples making love. He said, I watched a video where the woman said to her man, I love you, while they're making love. He said sincerely, I cried when I heard that. Make Love Not Porn is one of the answers to toxic masculinity. And that is why it is literally criminal that with our mission to end rape culture globally, we have still not found the investors and raised the funding that we need.
It's amazing to hear about this, and also remarkable to hear the impact it's having on men as well. And when thinking about women, and I want to move us on to Web3 and what the potential is there, I've heard you speaking about Web3 and sort of decentralization and the possibility for changing the balance of power, which I know that is something that sort of fascinates and that you're passionate about. I certainly see Web3 as a paradigm shift online where that power might get redistributed. But where or when did you start learning about all of this, and what is it that sort of struck you about Web3, and maybe also where that sort of ties in with your own business?
I've operated the cutting edge of the internet for many, many years, you know, originally in my advertising career, where, you know, I wanted to do many things that I couldn't, because when you run an agency, you are at the mercy of your client's appetite for risk. You know, you're working with brands and, you know, you may propose things to them, but unfortunately, you can't always get them to, you know, go with what's new and cutting edge. And honestly, I can point to so many examples over the years where if only they'd taken our advice, they would have been like, you know, the first adopters of astonishing things. But anyway, the one thing, Lauren, that I really want to communicate in this interview is that first and foremost, I want the women of Web3 to invent new business models for Web3. And I am single-minded in putting that call out, because money is power. And we've absolutely seen in Web3 that the white male business model of pump and dump doesn't work. You know, I mean, it worked for a ton of white men extremely effectively in the early days, but now that model is irretrievably broken. And I want to see the women of Web3 make an absolute goddamn fucking shit ton of money for women. And how you do that is by coming up with new business models that you can integrate into or deploy around Web3. And I really emphasize this because I observe that people tend to think one of two things. In either this is the Web3 business model that's been operating to date, it is the only business model, it's the way Web3 makes money, that is the only way it ever will. Or they think there's a set number of business models out there and you can only ever operate one of those. Neither is true. Your business model for Web3 can be anything that you design it to be. And a really good starting point, and one that I would encourage all our listeners to undertake, is to simply ask yourself, how would I like to make money with Web3? Because the safe bet, you like to make it not the way you're currently making it. And honestly, we have not even begun to see what Web3 can truly be through the female lens. And I say that because I'm a member of a number of Web3 communities and Discords, and I absolutely support them. I mean, I have a bunch of NFTs that I bought not to make money, but because I wanted to buy work that was being created by women artists for communities of women, you know, Meta Angels, BFF, Hug, you know, et cetera, et cetera. But I do observe women looking at the way the white guys were doing it and not radically revolutionizing what we could be doing instead. We have not even begun to see what Web3 could be through the female lens. And so another thing I'd like to really encourage our listeners to do is to take a long, hard look around you at the Web3 landscape and ask yourself, what do I think is missing that should be there? What would I love to be able to make use of that I can't because nobody's built it? What do I think I could uniquely bring to the table that does not already exist? And then do that. And when you conduct this exercise, bring a second lens to it. Because, so my dear friend Natalie Molina Nino, who is an amazing entrepreneur investor, some years ago, she wrote a book called Leapfrog, for which she interviewed a number of female founders, myself included. And the reason it's called Leapfrog is because she interviewed us about all the obstacles we faced and how we'd overcome them, with the idea being that this book would enable the women who came after us to leapfrog those obstacles because we'd given them solutions. So it's a fantastic book that everyone should read anyway. But the reason I'm sharing this with you is because there is something Natalie says in that book that I quote all the time, which is, you know how, you know, we're always encouraged to, you know, find what you're passionate about, start something around that. And Natalie says in Leapfrog, forget passion, find things you want to punch. And so my message to women of Web3 is, when you are conducting this exercise I'm asking you to do, which is looking at the entire landscape and identifying what is missing that you could bring to the table through your lens, also ask yourself, looking at the landscape of Web3, what currently makes me red hot with anger? What massively infuriates me? What am I incredibly frustrated by every single day? Solve that. Because that's a billion-dollar opportunity.
Wow, that's incredible. And that even applies to Women of Web3 as my business, is that I get furious when I think about the idea that it could be the sort of Elons and Marks and Jeffs of the world that will be creating what comes next online. And actually, the idea that it could stay just this very small homogenous group, that does infuriate me. And so that is this kind of driving passion for why I needed to sort of go and make something to try and change that. And do you think men also have a responsibility to help change what comes next and sort of diversify who is building these billion-dollar businesses? Because I can see the possibility of women sort of going and launching, creating, getting fired up and going making things. But can men help? Is it their responsibility as well to make this happen?
For right-minded men, they know it's their responsibility. And so I moderated a panel the week before last at South by Southwest Sydney, which was called Where Are All the Men? And the topic of the panel was, how can we get many more men to stand up, speak up, support, fund, and champion women? And it was a very interesting place to moderate this panel, because we had two women and two men on the panel. The men were Gary Williams, who works at Tractor Ventures, which is a venture debt company that actually funds a lot of female founders who often don't realize that the debt can be a better, more effective way to fund their business than the traditional VC model. Jeremy Little and Hannah Moreno, who are a husband and wife team who run a PR company, and Elaine Stead, who is a female VC. And it was an especially interesting place to have this conversation because Australia has a very macho culture. And getting men to speak up for and support women is it's as difficult, but possibly even more difficult than it is, you know, somewhere like the US or the UK. And so we did a number of prep sessions in advance of the panel, because what we were determined to do was, bring a very positive approach to this conversation, as in enabling men to see the benefits to them in doing this, and B, to identify actions that every man in the audience, and actually every member of the audience, could take following this discussion to change this scenario. So we gave this panel to a stacked out audience. It was standing room only in the space we were in. And, you know, I'll give you a couple of examples of the action points that we gave men that are translatable to Web3. So one issue we identified was that, as we all know, when you are a woman expressing an opinion on the internet, it's massive trolling time, and men very rarely step up to support and back you. So Hannah had a really great recommendation, which was, so she had been engaged in some extremely unpleasant back and forth in a comment thread in some forum where she'd been attacked by a large investor, a white male investor in the Australian scene. And so she basically said to Jeremy, her husband, lend me your profile. So she literally stopped engaging with this guy as herself and began engaging with him as her husband. And depressingly, obviously, the tone of the conversation changed completely. He was willing to hear from a man what he was not willing to hear from a woman. And so our action point for the audience was, men, lend women your voices, and we mean that literally. Make your social media profile over to a woman, without everybody knowing. Let her engage in dialogues as you to shift mindsets and make things happen. Okay, so that's something very easy that men can do. You know, they don't have to say anything. Just lend women your voice, literally, you know. And then, you know, something else was, I'm a very big fan of what I call thought experiments. And so my action point for the men in the audience, we had quite a few male investors, was do a deliberate thought experiment. The next time you have a female founder in front of you pitching you, or the next time you are reviewing a pitch deck from a female founder, before you start, say to yourself, what I'm about to see, what I'm about to read, what I'm about to hear is the next multi-billion dollar unicorn. And I'm going to read this deck, listen to this pitch, thinking that all the way through. And as this woman talks, or as I go through these slides, I'm going to be telling myself, these are all the reasons why this is the next billion-dollar unicorn. Because that absolutely changed the way that pitch hits.
It's all in the mindset. And just briefly back to what you're saying about lending women your voices, I definitely noticed in the early days of exploring Web3 and Discord, there's this very sort of macho, even like quite aggressive culture in the sort of NFT and crypto area. And I was even seeing women pretending to be men in order to kind of navigate this space. I just sort of hearing, I can't remember how I even found out that that was the case, that they sort of, you know, confess that actually they'd taken on completely different personas online because you can be anonymous in sort of Web3 and on Discord. Just funny that, well, it's kind of sad that that was the case, that they had to felt they had to sort of pretend to be men in order to be accepted or succeed in this space. And I was even seeing men sort of upping their macho persona online, and more so than like that they'd even be really comfortable with, because they thought that was what was demanded or expected in that context.
And by the way, Lauren, that is why, you know, everything I'm saying here goes back to invent new business models. Because the moment you prove that the women of Web3 can make an absolute goddamn fucking shit ton of money, you don't have to pretend to be a man anymore, because men will want to be women.
Yep. I really like that.
I'm quite serious about that. And what about communication through demonstration? You know, the men of Web3 are lost, by the way, because for every one of those handful of white billionaires, you know, there are many more men who have seen everything melt away, have lost everything. You know, I follow Coin Fessions on Twitter, you know, which is anonymous stories of Web3 and crypto. And just, you know, some of those stories are heartbreaking. And so the men of Web3 are desperate for new business models, for, you know, new leaders, new pioneers of what we can do in Web3. And when those come from women, that will completely change the game.
I absolutely agree. And I think you're right that actually, when talking about that sort of risk and reward factor, if men have been able to take bigger risks because, you know, women are, whether it's naturally risk averse or trained to be risk averse, it's meant that we haven't taken as many risks with things like crypto and NFTs. And you're right, actually, men have been the biggest winners and the biggest losers in this space because they've been, in whatever way, able to take those larger risks. But yeah, it's probably something that we need to sort of address more in Web3, is those, some of those losses, and like how you, even just the kind of like emotional fallout of things like that.
Oh yeah, no, horrific. But, you know, women created business models will remove risk for everybody.
Yeah.
That's the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Invent new business models that don't involve risk in any way whatsoever.
I'd love to briefly to touch on salaries and pay in Web3, or in, I suppose, in tech startups in the context of Web3, metaverse, AI, etc. I told you over email, you've been a big inspiration to me and to many other women because of your fantastic advice around how women should ask for more money, that I implemented your salary advice of asking for the highest amount you can say out loud without laughing. And when I implemented that, I got 50% more pay,
yep.
Which also means, so brilliant as it was, I was, you know, thrilled at the time, but it's like, okay, actually, if people were that ready to give me 50% more, that means I was being underpaid until that point.
Absolutely.
Great.
Yeah.
How would you frame that in the context of Web3, which does actually seem to have quite wildly varying salaries?
Honestly, I would just say to women, don't work for anybody else. Make your own money. You know, design your own business model, start your own Web3 venture, make your own money.
I really like that. Thank you. And do you have one last piece of, I'm not going to say advice, because I know you don't want to sort of give women generic advice, that you're very action focused. So what is one action that women can take off the back of listening to this episode?
Literally, I would just love everyone listening to just sit down and think, how would I like to make money in Web3? And I'm going to design my own business model and put that to work. That is the single most useful and productive thing you can do for yourself and the rest of us as a result of listening to me today.
Thank you so much. That's brilliant. And lastly, Cindy, where can people find you?
Well, I would love people to find me, not literally me per se, but please, if you like everything I've said, please support my own startup. Please go to makelovenotporn.tv, sign up, subscribe. Subscriptions start literally at, you know, you can buy a video credit bundle for $7. Okay, so teensy weensy amounts, but I would love you to support me. You can find me on Substack at Dear Cindy, and you can ask me anything you like. And again, please consider taking out a paid subscription, because all of that money goes to Make Love Not Porn. And you can find me and Make Love Not Porn on Twitter and Instagram at Cindy Gallup, at Make Love Not Porn. And do follow me on LinkedIn, which is my favorite social media platform now that Twitter's a shit show.
Absolutely agree. And I think people will find this incredibly valuable. I think it will light a fire underneath our listeners. So thank you so much for your time.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Women of Web3 podcast. If you've liked this episode, please do give us a rating or review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from. It really helps more people find the show. Check out our website, womenofweb3.co, to find our talent collective you can apply to be part of, or post your Web3 vacancies on our jobs board. If you've got any questions or comments, just tweet us at womenofweb3co, and we'll see you next Thursday morning.